Hi everyone, you're listening to the Vialucci Podcast, uncensored and completely unedited discussions about life and everything in it. We hope you enjoy the show.
And we're live on the Vialucci Podcast.
What is this asking you about, coffee?
Oh yeah, so how come you didn't have one this morning then? What made you not have one?
Because otherwise I'd be a twitchy mess.
Oh, okay.
And I'll just be here winking at Brandon. Like,
you know, I don't mind a little wink, and I also don't mind a Twinkie mess. So I'm for where I'm from. Brandon, I feel right at home. That'd be so nice to have a Twinkie
Brandon
mess.
Texted me. You said, was she flirting with me there? Or I was twitching the whole time?
No, I feel all my aunts have that. That's right. Yeah.
Brandon, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm doing good, but before we go on, I just have to tell you, you got really nice teeth.
Who?
You do.
Oh, yeah. I've never said that to you, but I always think, oh, my God, he's got lovely white teeth.
They're almost distracting, aren't they? They're really nice.
Well,
and
you
know what? Here's the thing.
I dated a dentist for a lot of years.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
But the thing that's great about them is that they're not perfect, so they don't look
British.
Fake.
Yeah. Mm. There was somebody I was talking to. Oh, it's great. You know when somebody says something? He was talking about, he just said it, and he wasn't being funny. He just said it. He was talking about, he started dating this girl. And said, like, he said, like, trust me, she's like a 9 out of 10. I was like, oh, he said, no. He said, like, an American 9 out of 10. I was like, oh. And I thought, that's a thing. You know, I can reference
the American 9. I find offense to that a little bit.
No, but so when you talk about teeth, you go, right, it's sort of respectable, attractive, yeah. Not like you've had them shoved in your face and now it looks like you've got something in there.
Well, I've got effed up teeth, and that's just because I'm from the Ozarks in the States. So I know someday I will have fake teeth, but I want fake teeth with one that's kind of crooked,
right, yeah.
So people don't like spot it right away.
Yeah.
That's how they should make
not offensively
dentures.
Perfect.
Yeah, like one slightly off.
Mine's bottom. I bought one's very crooked.
Right. Let's get off of this orthodontist.
Sorry.
What have you got a notepad for?
To write down things that I think say that might be clever that I want to memorize.
I was going
to
say, is that a comedian thing that you make notes wherever?
I do
it. I do take.
Yeah. What I do usually, I send myself an email.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Did you like voice memos?
No, I don't do voice memos because I don't like this new trend of people sending voice messages instead of text messages when responding. I don't listen to them. I don't.
Yeah, when did that start?
About, I don't know.
About 10 years ago.
It's because kids don't ever do it.
As well, yeah.
I'm a voice memoer.
Is it more of a girl thing to get all of it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I find it really awkward texting. I can't get everything out that I want to say. Otherwise, it would be an essay.
I think that's a feminine quality.
Yeah.
Not necessarily always connected to women, but I think that's a feminine quality to express yourself that way and wanting to have that.
Well,
I don't
family,
listen.
Because my family, we live. You know, my mum and dad live in Wales. They want to hear our voices. So, like, on the family, like,
that's
WhatsApp,
we
voice note back and forth. But
I wonder if it's a sort of ADHD thing. Like, I can't get it out quick enough. Like, I can't. It takes too long to write.
Do what I do. I do what I just did with you guys getting in the room. I send, like, a picture of myself.
Mm. What do you mean?
I said, I can't get in. How do I ring the doorbell?
Yeah.
And you did it. Instead of me writing thank you, I took a picture of myself smiling in the room.
Get that.
Oh,
like I do that always instead of writing anything.
Right.
I can't spell.
Yeah.
But this.
Yeah.
This. This is the moneymaker.
Yes.
Right here. Yeah.
You pull off the rugged cap perfectly.
Yeah, I know.
I've seen people wear it and go, no, you're too perfect for the cap. That works perfectly.
Yeah. My partner wears he loves wearing caps.
Cap.
But he always says he hatfishes people because he's got a bald head.
You know
when you catfish someone?
No, what's that?
Catfish when you like, what?
How do you not know what
catfish
is?
I've got a TV, so I don't know what.
When you're dating, it's mainly on dating sites where you say you're something, but you're not. Like you may say
lying.
That. Yeah, basically. You're lying
what's
to the person.
Catfish.
Where did that come from?
But you know what? I should know this because
a catfish is a fish.
So
does it
in like
mimic
a lake.
Something else?
I don't know. That's where it has to come from.
Yeah.
But you know, traditionally, it's from like older men pretending to be like 12-year-old girls. That's like
taking a doctor.
There's like lighter ones where a guy will be like, oh, I've got a six pack and he doesn't. And then the girl goes on the date with him and she's, this is like big.
That's
fat
the
guy.
Disney version of catfishing.
What's that to do with the cat?
Because he's got a bald head.
Yeah.
So like he looks great. He says, I look great with a hat on. And then I take my hat off and everyone's like, oh.
So I have to do it for self-tape as an actor. If I like to wear the ball cap because I've been doing American stuff. But when I slate, like when I give my ident at the beginning, I take the cap off first so they can see I have hair.
Right, yeah. Oh, why? So you actually have to. Oh God!
Yeah, because it looks like I'm covering something up.
Right.
Yeah. Like there's a bunch of like country western, like country music stars that always wear, and then all of a sudden you see them without the hat. You're like, oh no, put it back on.
But are they all usually bald? Aren't they? No, to me, honest to God, one of the great, there's two things in my life that when I say things to people, they're looking at me as if poor you, and I know they're doing it. But at the exact same time, I'm thinking, no, you don't understand, poor you. Mm. One is age, knowing what age you are.
Yeah.
When you don't know and you just didn't celebrate birthdays, when I see what it does to people, people look at me and go, you don't know how old you haven't celebrated your birthday. Oh, you put, and I'm thinking, you're just carrying this weird weight, and I have to sort of have you look at me like I'm weird, but I know what it does to you.
No, you are weird. You don't know how old you are.
Definitely. No, that is celebrate birthday, so it just didn't.
But do you know how old you are?
No. I was weird. At the age of 27.
No, that is.
I can remember the moment I was at a club, and so I remember where I was because I was embarrassed, and I was outside, I was working there, and a girl just said to me, oh, how old are you? I had to think because I did not have a clue. Nobody had asked me before.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a fine line between like being eccentric and stupid.
No, bear in mind. I don't want to go that, but I left home. I lived on the streets. Like I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
So
okay.
It was bad.
And oh, so
one year
dealing with
2 years.
Oh.
There was no celebrated birthdays. Nobody asked. Oh, and I didn't ask anybody. And everyone was transient.
So we give a guess about how old he is.
So every year somebody tells me, and it just doesn't. It's like you ask me my passport number. It's like, and I
wait. Nobody knows their passport number.
But that's what it means nothing because I never grew up.
I know what it begins with.
It's not given to you at birth. You don't. You're not. God didn't give you your age. That's a social thing that was kept in
every
year.
Okay, but you have to know what year you're born, or else you wouldn't be able to fill out those things.
Only because I was born either side of when Elvis Presley died.
Oh,
that's the.
Oh,
it was either my mum was in when. I went in when he died, or I came out. I was born then, or when he died.
So, do you have like an affinity towards him now? Whenever you think about, you're like, because there's a slight thing that
a complete like ape thing in me.
Yeah.
The most sense, but that's it.
Elvis Presley,
and it was the year that the Voyager spacecraft was first launched.
Oh.
But that's dyslexia. Like I'm better with images than numbers.
He doesn't know how old he is, but he knows these like bizarre random facts.
Yeah,
well, it's because of the dyslexia. I'm visual.
I'm opposite to you. I want everyone to know it's my birthday. I want everyone to know.
But the thing is, because I worked in clubs again, go back to clubs, and because I didn't have any references to age. But I remember everyone when they were 17 were desperate to be 18.
Yeah,
and then when they got to 21, they would reminisce about being 16. And when they got their 30s and 40s, they were miserable because they. And I thought, why do you carry this?
Okay, here's the thing I don't like. I don't like birthday week. I don't know if you guys are doing it here, but my friends back home still, usually girls for some reason, they have birthday weeks. Oh, it's my birthday week.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Do you do that? You're looking at me and smiling. Do they do it in Essex?
Because it's something that you can get away with. Like, if you can get away with it, I'll be like to my partner, it's my birthday week. You know, are we going to go out on Wednesday? Are we going to go out on Tuesday? Yeah. Like, but I have friends to go out with or my family. So
you realize everybody in the world has a birthday.
I know, but like, this is the time to like... bring people
together. Do you know in North Korea they don't have
birthdays?
To celebrate
me.
They don't celebrate birthdays, not in the
culture. Or the Jehovah Witnesses.
But what they do is they have one day of the year that everyone celebrates at the same time.
Really?
Yeah. I'd probably do pretty well over
there. Yeah, you would.
For a start. As a sort of...
You'd do well in North Korea.
Yeah. When it's sort of Dennis Rodman, they'd sort of stare at me as an oddity.
It's like having loads of kids and just having... Guys, you've just got one day in the year. Yeah. We're just going to celebrate all your birthdays.
But
I think you're the only one who's found something positive about North Korea.
Yeah, it's a slight... It's a one pleasure.
I'm going to go to North Korea. Everybody has the same
birthday. The other thing... Yeah, so the age. Everyone thinks, you poor thing. And I'm just looking at them thinking, I know the burden you carry. Outside of on your birthday, this thing, the years that you've got to be doing certain things of the year in your life. I know you carry that in you. It's a misery.
No, you do, because when you get to like 30, especially when you're
constant.
A female and you get to 30 and they're like, oh, you're not married yet.
Yeah, 30, 35, 40. And
you don't have a house yet.
Yeah.
You don't have kids yet. Yeah. I'm like, I've got a cat.
But that's
all right, leave me alone.
That really is in your bulk. People have, they're mostly affected on the negative side of the range.
Yeah.
From 18 plus. Mm. So people look at me like, and I'm thinking, I wish it would so benefit you if you just genuinely did. Not if you ignored it. You have to genuinely not know, and the world feels a lot more nicer. Mm. That's the first one. The second thing is what we're talking about, being bald, shaving your head. I shaved my head from the early 20s. It's a long story, but anyway. And when you do it, anyone that's done it, you realize what a release it is from ego, because you realize how much of you is tied up in your hair. The fact of taking anyone saying, right, if I shaved your head now and that was it, how would you feel? It's like this, oh my God, I can't, it would be horrific.
Mm.
And it's an ego thing, and it's always there every morning. You go, and when you shave your head off, you then look at everybody else and go, you poor bastard.
So I like a shaved head. So I had a shaved head a lot in my 20s and my early 30s. But the older you get, the more you want the hair, because then everybody,
not the opposite.
No, because everybody starts going bald, and then you're like, oh, I need to look as young as I can for as long as I can for in this industry.
Oh, that, forget
that. So I needed like the hair for like roles.
Yeah, no, of course, yeah.
If there's anything that comes across that's like Disney dad, or it's an advert for a dad in a barbecue, they want a full head of hair on that fella.
The thing is, though, when you shave your head,
disappointing.
I know.
It's like, keep it real, you know.
Or you can be bald, but then you have to be fat and funny. You have to go for a thug.
Go for that thing.
I like my partner. Like when we went to Australia, like he had hair, but he had, you know, it was receding.
Oh no!
And you know, he was really uncomfortable with it. And I said, when we were in Australia, I was like, do it now, shave it off now, before we meet anybody in Australia. So then everyone's going to think that that's who you know, that's what's going on. And then you get a tan on it before we go meet new people. But I think he looks so much sexier now because he's so much more confident. And
so Jason Statham?
Well, you look at the Disney. We had this conversation on another podcast. We were talking about why the baddies are always bald. Because it's in like Thanos or whatever. Yeah. Just go back through all, they're always bald.
But they're the sexiest.
Because there's a sense of masculinity, which equals danger. Especially in this society.
Yeah.
If you're masculine, there's a sense of danger. So they have people as bald because it's like that's a masculine thing.
Mm.
And the thing is that the people go bald because of an over production of testosterone. It's a weird thing. But it also, it de-ages you.
Yeah.
So you see people in photographs that have always had a bald head. You haven't got a bloody clue what age they are. It's just, it's always, it's
like, you look the same.
It's like a black suit. It's just, it's, what year was that? No, where are the flares? You go, no.
Yeah.
So I feel bad that everybody carries around this head of hair that's all their egos tied up in it. You go, if you just, I mean, I don't want to get cultish, but it's probably, it's such a, it, that must be part of the release. Just shave it off and just go.
Yeah.
You're connected somehow with it. You're drawn to the kind of.
Yeah. The group cult mentality. Yeah, you leader. Are. Yeah. You've already mentioned cult, shaved heads, North Korea.
Far off here.
Yeah.
I've been accused of starting cults. I was like, no, it's just.
You know, I thought before that I'd be a good cult leader. I thought I'm charismatic.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the spiritual world. I'm a good leader. I always thought I could, like,
I was
as a fallback plan.
Yeah. I was saying earlier, like, I think I'm like naive enough to join a cult without even knowing I am.
Right.
I mean, I'd be like, oh God, you're so sweet. Yeah. Okay, I'll come and stay with you. Are we wearing these gowns? Okay, cool.
Well, maybe that's what Essex is.
Maybe that's what Essex is. You definitely, so we were obviously saying before, you need to come to Essex. We need to go on a night out in Essex. We need to find some geezers.
Oh, dude.
And literally, no, we need to go to like a proper Essex pub. You know, in the middle of nowhere, you're going to get the proper geezers.
Yeah.
You know, they're all.
The word geezer is water. So what's why? I don't know why that's termed geezer. Is a water fountain. It's like a geezer.
I don't know where it's called.
Geyser.
Oh, is it a geyser?
Yeah, but with your accent, the same thing.
Might be the thing. Yeah. We better start talking about you eventually. How long have you been involved in comedy? Did comedy come in before acting or anything?
No, so I was an actor first, and then I.
Hang on, go even further back. So was it from college? Did it something theatre?
Yeah, so I was like a musical theater guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I did that. And then I ran a performing arts school in California for years and years and years. We knew we were going to move to England. So I got into TV and film, and I only was able to cast like child molester, wife beater. Do you know what an acting reel is?
Yeah.
So on my acting reel, it was just me beating up women, but like a variety of women, like Mexican women, white women, black women. But I'm just like,
you're so inclusive.
I mean, that's just all my reel. That's all I got cast. And I told my agent, I'm like, I can do comedy. I'm funny.
Yeah.
He's like, don't be complaining that you're working.
Mm.
I said, I want to do. He said, go out. Why don't you write your own stuff? I'm in LA at that time. Write your own stuff. Do a little bit and put together a little reel. So I started doing comedy and then fell in love like with the writing, with that part of it. And that was 2 years before we moved here. So I told my partner when we moved here, I'm going to give stand-up a try here. I don't know if the American stuff will work here, but it did. They, like, love, like, all the redneck. That whole story, like, being gay from the Ozarks, like, all of that stuff. They, like, bought right into that.
Oh, because who's the other guy? Theo Von. He's just sort of got that redneck thing going there, on.
It exists.
Yeah.
This whole thing exists.
Well, I don't know any others, though.
Yeah. No, but... Yeah, so I had a little niche that I can work here.
Yeah, it's a little unknown world, really, especially in England. You sort of know what it is, but you haven't got any references.
I know, and you can just get away with a lot. The accent is different. Yeah. And then my generation, too, that whole thing of what it was like to come out of the closet when you're from, like, a white trash area. Yeah, what is that like? What's that process like? And finding the humor and the pain. Yeah.
Do you know the show Top Gear?
Yes.
Right, so you know, the one when it was with, what's his name? We got sacked for thumping someone.
Jeremy
Clarkson. Jeremy it was Clarkson. A bit more right wing. It was weird. But they did the thing where they went to Alabama as a joke and they drove through and they had to, because there's always friction between the three of them, they had to drive through Alabama in three different cars and each host would decorate the other one's car. And it was... Okay. Yeah. Hillary for president. It was done in pink and it got out of hand because they were specifically started going certain places.
Right.
So they went to like just a petrol station.
Right.
And the woman's there. It was like sort of Deliverance. They probably specifically chose a dirty looking, you know.
Sure.
And somebody made some phone calls and then they're getting chased and they had to run because people were throwing bricks at the car.
Oh, no.
And they had to sort of get the fuck out because they realized. It's not a joke. What you're doing is like doing that to everybody. You're talking about like queer this on the side, Hillary for thing, and you're going into places and like pickup trucks were turning up and they started like chasing them.
You're talking about somebody, you're dealing with somebody's then identity.
Yeah, it's not a TV
that
show
doesn't know somebody, else. Yeah. And that's a weird thing. What I do like is a British phrase of, and it got out of hand, which is an American phrase too. But I like just the intensity of your eyes on just a simple got out of hand, like, shit hit the fan.
Got
out of hand. Tipping point,
Got out of hand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I do like on your Instagram, you have like little like videos of you doing Generation X.
It's a new YouTube thing.
So it's your generation. You're explaining like Ariana Grande, what an Ariana Grande is, what a Dojo Cat is.
Dude, I mean, my generation is getting lost. We're getting left behind. That X generation where we thought we were like skateboards and we're so gnarly and all this, like Keanu Reeves, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's going on. So now I have the YouTube channel explaining.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the 30s and 40-year-olds are going to come back into fashion as like the last humans. Dealt with that sort of ape human being that sort of didn't go out without the internet attached.
See, we don't know how old you are, but I'm going to assume you are right on that bottom cusp of X-Gen.
I don't know what that means.
He's on the bottom cusp of X-Gen.
What is it, 1980? Do you know what you are? I'm millennial.
Oh, God, do you know what it is?
Yeah, I'm
she's millennial.
Yeah, I'm not. So millennials from like 1981. To
It's not post
1994 or something like that, or 1995. Yeah, I'm millennial.
God.
Yeah.
Do you know what you are?
I'm X-Gen. I'm X-Gen. Generation X. X-Gen. Like X Games.
Oh, right. I thought you meant the number 10.
I think there's Gen. What is it? Baby Boomers.
Baby Boomers.
Gen X. Mm-hmm.
There was the greatest generation, World War II.
Yeah.
And then baby boomers, their children.
Yeah.
And then X-Gen, Generation X is the children of them. Then millennials. And then Zoomers.
Gen Z.
No, Zoomers are Gen Z.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. There's a next one, though.
What's
under
next
that? One? I don't know. Producer man.
get it up.
Zoomers. Is that Zoom? Is in the Zoom camera?
No. I thought it was just Generation
Z. Zoomers.
Zoomers.
But that's for Zoomers. So,
It's a really awesome.
Oh, 1990. Oh, millennials to 1997. Okay. And then after that is the Zoomers.
So, yes, my YouTube channel, Generation Explain, talking about just explaining all this. I just did one on like talking to Bubba. Like, Bubba would be like my cousins, like all in like Missouri, Bakersfield, those people who have no idea what's going on. They look like this. They just drink beer. Yeah. They don't drink Bud Light anymore because of all that, but they drink Coors Light, like explaining what Gaza. So I'm like, Bubba, here is what Gaza is.
Did that hurt them, the Dylan Mulvaney?
Yeah, like Bud Light. It didn't. What do you mean? Did it hurt them?
Not hurt them, but like, did it?
There's no more Bud Light drinking. Yeah,
really?
No. What do you mean? Not drinking Bud Light.
Isn't that still a big thing? Bud Light.
No, it's just over now. You're not ever buying Bud Light again.
So they did a marketing. Oh, because of that. Yeah,
okay, right.
Yeah.
Oh, never, Jesus. That actually had an effect.
Yeah.
Yes. All my people, like the people I come from, those people are never drinking Bud Light again.
Oh,
what is the next drink? What's the go-to drink in America?
They'll drink Coors Light.
Coors Light.
And if you're poor, you drink Natural Light.
Coors Light. For now. Yeah, they're there for now. America.
What marketing does to a company.
It's all interesting, though, isn't it?
It is interesting.
Mm. Well, it's
are we
going to
go
silly.
Down that? No. Let's go on to something else.
So when was the first time you did stand-up?
So it would have been, I moved here in 2019. It would have been three
years
before
that. So it
was
here you did stand-up the first time?
No, 3 years. I moved here in 2019, 18, 17, 16, 2016.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Can you remember it well?
My stand-up?
Yeah, the first time.
Yeah.
How did it go?
It was great.
Oh, it went well.
Yeah. I mean, it was great enough to go, this was a fantastic experience.
Yeah.
What I had great was the people in the room were great.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the sense of like, afterwards I went, what do you guys think? It was my first time. They're like, dude, all this rocks. I've never seen anybody really? With your story. Get rid of this, get rid of this, get rid of this. Like right away.
Yeah, you didn't get things thrown at you and told you're a waste.
No. It was a nice like safe space.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's obviously like when you're so niche as a person as well. It's so much easier to come across to an audience because we don't know it. Well, there's so many like comedians that we've had and we're like, oh, we've heard this joke. We've heard this. Well, we've heard this.
And, you know, all of that. Like what is your unique thing?
Yeah.
Like I've had a lot of people say there's nobody telling this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was really a lot of fun to dig into. Yeah. But also when I talk, I didn't get things thrown at me because when you do stand-up comedy, your first bit is always going to be like in a room with other comedians. That's what that is. It's not a real audience.
Right, okay,
so when you're first starting, it's just going to be the other people are just other people waiting for their turn. Mm. So usually they're all on their phone. But if you do something that's funny, they'll engage. So that's how you're like judging it.
Yeah.
Like, can I get their attention?
I don't think British people, we don't throw stuff.
No, it's
no,
not.
We're way too reserved. No,
neither do Americans.
If we hate something, we'll just clap. Not as enthusiastically if we don't like something. Or we won't,
I wonder if it's just a generation.
No, all you have to do is look at your phone. It is the same thing.
Yeah.
When you look out and you just see they're more lit than you are.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a problem.
They can't see you.
Yeah.
I think you're doing that. It's just a normal thing for to lift up your phone.
I think it's so rude. When you're going to you're going to a show, someone has made the effort to be there, get off your phone, just put it on silent and put it in your bag.
So what the comedians are doing, they're going over their notes.
Oh, okay.
Like, they're looking so they're ready for their 5 or their 10. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
Okay, fair
enough. But so you know what? Yeah. I'm fine with it. Make me work.
Yeah. Mm.
Make me be so interesting.
Right,
I'm more interesting than your phone.
Use as a barometer. How many phones are up at the moment?
Fair
Let me work for it. Yeah.
I like
work for your attention.
Change.
Yeah.
How did the career go then? So you had your first stand-up. Did you decide to push all your chips in with...
Oh, yeah, and I just loved it. I loved the writing. I liked that engagement. It would fit me to a T.
Yeah.
And then when I got here, I had some success. I won the British Comedy Guide New Comedian of the Year. Ba-da-da. I mean, it was rolling along. I became a professional opener.
Oh, okay.
And then, I got sick. So I haven't been on the road.
COVID?
I had a bad reaction to one of the vaccines.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I had a small stroke.
Shit.
And so I have not been on the road since 2.5 years. So I'm writing now.
Yeah. Was it definitely the vaccine? Or you assume it was.
Yeah, I just assume it was. It was 2 weeks after my second AstraZeneca.
Oh,
AstraZeneca.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Or a weird coincidence that I happened to have a stroke 2 weeks after my second AstraZeneca.
I'm so sorry that happened.
Yeah, all that is a whole thing. So I'm writing now, hoping to get back in.
What have you not liked about stand-up? Is there anything downside to it?
Sure.
Unpredictability?
No, going and watching like bad shit. Like
bad, good.
Yeah, bad, like bad comedy. Like you can only...
Rubbish comedy.
Right, so you got to do the hustle, right? Yeah. So I moved here, I did the hustle for a year. I did every single place. It was like, we got a stage, we do comedy. So you're just watching like other like bad comedians get up there and like just
die.
Oh, yeah, and you're doing that every night.
Yeah.
You're like, oh man, how long? So you really have to work to like get your way out of that.
Yeah.
That's the bad part. There's a disservice to British comedians. So when I'm in Hollywood, you get 3 minutes. Boom, you're going to do the improv, you're going to do the comedy story. You get a 3-minute slot.
Yeah.
So you're writing like all your material. You got like 10 minutes worth. I'm like, all this is gold. And they're like, oh no, you get 3 minutes.
Right.
At the Laugh Factory, I think it's the Laugh Factory, you get 2 minutes. So you go and you do all your stuff and you have to take all this down. So now you have a solid three. Like everything out of my mouth, every word is there for a reason because it's taking up a little bit of a second in my two, 3 minutes.
Listen to the,
here they give them 10 minutes.
Yeah, you know,
and they ramble.
Do you know the comedian Frank Skinner?
No.
Over here. Anyway, he's well known for a long time and he's now on the radio. But he said, like, and he did the stadiums over here. That's a comedian. And he said he would go to America and he said, I didn't realize they were so specific about the times. And he said, I know that guy's set and I'm hearing him do the jokes and it sounds like the same joke, but he's changed the time to the second. He said, what? But I didn't know that he missed certain words. That's not a 3 minute bit, that's a 5 minute bit. But he said the same joke, and he hit 3 minutes, and I don't know how he did it.
Yeah.
But to the second.
He said, to the second. Said, you learn. Yeah. You learn to like, and now everything is so great. Here, the people who start stand-up here, they give them too much time.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll see comedians get up there, and they'll have a 5 minute, and they're like, ba-da-da. And then they're like, oh, I got another 2 minutes left. What should I talk about? I'm like, get off.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
If that's what you need to say, you are done. Right. You were done 15 seconds in.
Do you have an agent for the comedy?
No, so you'd have a manager.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So I have an agent for TV and film and stage.
Yeah,
I have that one here, but I don't have like a comedy manager. I had somebody look at me right after I won the big award.
Yeah,
and then he realized how old I actually was.
Oh no!
Yeah,
as a negative.
What?
Yeah, as a negative. Like we went for coffee. He's like, I'm so interested in you know representing you. Here's blah 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 blah. And then we went for coffee and goes, well, how old are you?
Yeah.
Because in my comedy routine, I talk about coming out of the closet when I was 35. So he's kind of doing the math.
Yeah.
And then you're like, got it. And like, that was it.
Just changed.
Like, it was like a bad date. Yeah.
But your age is like you have so much experience, and then you can be funnier because you've.
Yeah,
so
but
much
I think he's
experience.
Looking for like you know 10, 15 years of having you know, like get a young talent for 10, 15 years.
Okay. But how does he know that you're going to go on for 10 to 15 years?
You know, it's just so now my job is to prove him wrong, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's just the easier route. To them, it's just it's money. How much can I squeeze out of this sponge?
Yeah.
He's not a human being.
It's all right, dude. What it is I'm a product, and he's looking like, what can I get out of this product? Is my time, if I can have 15 comedians that I'm going to pour my life into, is Brandon one of those 15?
Yeah.
Or am I going to keep looking?
It's just money,
No, that's right. Disappointing. But then you go on, what else can I do?
Who do you listen to comedian-wise? Like, who do you like?
Do you know who Kathleen Mulligan is?
Yeah.
Rings a bell.
She's an Irish. She's from Missouri in the States. She's so funny. She's a storyteller. Mm. Chris Rock in the 90s and the early 2000s, I don't think anyone was better than him. Chris Rock was able to take things that were controversial and then like write such a solid joke.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you who the best joke writer is, and I didn't realize it till I read his jokes. He's a book of jokes, and it's
Dangerfield.
I know. The television show
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Seinfeld is the best joke writer.
Yeah.
Like it's set up.
Yeah.
Something clever. Funny line.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
I just don't care for him. The jokes are solid.
What do you think? So obviously, like nowadays, everyone's extra sensitive. How do you think you're...
So, man, be creative, right?
Be creative,
Be creative or go against the stream. I mean, do either one.
Really controversial.
Be like, I'm not woke, here's my shit, right? Do that, you're going to find your audience.
Yeah. Like Ricky
Gervais. Or be totally woke and find something really creative.
Yeah.
As a gay comedian, I do not swear and I do not talk about sex.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
So I got to be really creative to find my way around that. And you know what? It's much more funny to say pecker instead of dick.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A joke works better if you have to be creative that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Why do you specifically stay away from those subjects?
Mm. Because I am kind of conservative.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And it makes you work a little harder.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So it's just naturally not something that you find funny.
I don't like if I turn on any television show and the opening scene is like just a man and woman just going at it in the bed and it's full on like I'm like, this isn't a show for me. If that's what you think entertainment is, It's not that, entertainment.
That, again, Frank Skinner, he was talking about, he was saying how watching comedians, he said, when they get desperate, they get loud. He said they try and start shouting to sort of overact. It's not
funny. The thing you learn is that it's just the opposite. I've heard this, how somebody told me. It was like trying to make somebody fall in love with you.
Yeah.
So if you're losing them and you're trying to pour it on more, it's the same way as a girl's like, I'm not interested. Yeah. But you're like, no, look at.
Right.
Like, the more animated. You do that, the more they. So you get softer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You pull it in.
Yeah.
And you make them like, it's.
Yeah.
Is that, oh, silence.
Yeah, you pull it, which is just the opposite of what you want to do.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I was talking to Kremer, the producer. He was talking, he's a musician. And it just stayed with me that there was a guy, he was talking about how he'd stage songs. I don't know what that, is it a choreographer, I suppose?
You know, choreographer.
And he said,
so cute. He's just so cute. I don't know what cat is. I wasn't educated. I don't know how old I am. What's somebody who makes up dances?
When you have 20 years of never looking at a TV screen, all your references, you don't pick them up along the way. Yeah. So people would have kids and they go, so and so's had a kid. I go, I don't know who you're talking about, let alone they've had kids.
I know this.
What's
I was like,
a child?
I was like, do you know the Saturdays?
Somebody bought
like,
a goat?
Yeah. Because you don't realize when you lose references, you pick up a lot from just hearing a radio. Station or looking at newspapers, when you don't know who anybody is, it becomes further and further away because you never got any references.
And what's funny is that if you and I were to say, I don't know who anybody is, we're meaning like general, I think he's kind of meaning like,
Karen still says to me, he knows, how can you not
his
know?
Mother's like calling him on the phone, you're like, who are you? How do you know me?
So I don't know who I am.
She's like, it's your birthday. He's like, now I know I don't know you.
Anyway, so so Karen, the other project, I was explaining something. And it just stated to me that the guy, this choreographer, he said that the silences are part of the music. And he said, even visually, he said, so he would see some singers and go, they're not an animated person. They're not like Elvis Presley. He said, so you always run towards your weakness. Don't run away from it. That might be your thing. And he said, he would have, I can't remember, but it was one of, it was a guy in the 60s. And it was, I saw the video. And he said, when you just don't move, any move you make after that looks dramatic.
Yeah.
He said, so he would just have him standing there singing with the no song on his face for like the first minute.
Yeah.
And then his hand would just slowly raise up and it suddenly become dramatic because you're using the nothingness to emphasize everything else. And I think that probably works with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that stillness is so great.
I wonder if, like even comedians.
Or any singer or anything like that. And then they do, before slowly they move, do them, crescendo you know, at the end, and everyone's silent before they do that. And
it's the same with acting,
and
too.
It gives you, and it gives you like goosebumps because you're like, I know what's coming. And then suddenly you get this like eargasm, you know, just like.
Eargasm. I've never heard that before. Get your pen going. We'll have that down. We'll stick that down. We'll use that.
Yeah, yeah.
Birthday.
did you just make that up?
No. I'd love to coin it and say it was mine, but no, I heard it from someone else.
What, was it Sex in the City? No, it sounds that sort of thing.
No, just like, you know, when something, you know, titillates
your... Yeah, it works. It's perfect, yeah.
your ears.
Is there any stand-up comedians where there's two of them? No? I suppose that's a show then.
That'd just be skits.
Yeah.
Right?
I thought maybe
that's like Morecambe
and Wise. But why not?
I suppose, yeah. Like, but just stand-up, though. Because a straight man there.
So, you know, British comedy is bigger here in England. You guys have so...
Really?
Yeah.
The industry?
Yeah, the industry and the love of comedy, of stand-up.
Yeah.
It's huge here.
Really?
Much bigger than it is in the States.
No, really?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, it is huge here. Everybody has a favorite comedian here. You talk to any British person, they're gonna rattle off these four or five people.
Right.
Always happens.
It's more light entertainment. It's more broad. It's more in the face.
And people doing it. Like when I came here and started like the open mic scene, there's people just doing it for fun. Like in Hollywood, these people are trying to get guest spots on a television show. They don't even want to be stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get noticed in the industry.
Right,
here they're like, no, it's fun. I'm doing this as a hobby. I'm like, well, stop, because you're wasting my 5 minutes.
Listen to the interview with Jay Leno, and he was talking about when things about his show and people he didn't like, and people would be funny, their agents would be funny. And he said, he had one agent, it was from a comedian, an upcoming comedian, and he said the agent was just like really weird, because he said a lot of times, was there any problems backstage? He said, well, we had one. The guy... it was a girl and she'd done modelling, but she was now... And he said, the agent said, right, she's not talking about her modelling, by the way. And he said, well, why not? It's part of her. He said, no, no, she's just talking. She said, well, she's up and coming. He said, you do know I can make a phone call and have 50 comedians here in a minute. He said, right. You haven't got really right.
Yeah, right.
Start bragging.
Right.
He said, I can make one phone call and there'll be a line of comedians at
it. I actually knew a guy who had, like, had this bucket list, and he was just like, he was quite well off and he had like a year out of working. And he said, for that year, I just learned how to play the guitar. I wanted to do my own art exhibition. So I did a load of paintings, did an art exhibition. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. So I literally did a set and stood up and made a few people laugh. And it was great. And went on to the next thing.
It is like, something. You meet a lot of people like, oh, I'd like to try that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole industry here in England of classes. Yeah. Like, take a stand-up class from like comedians that didn't make it.
Yeah,
and they like host these classes. Yeah. That doesn't mean they're not a bad teacher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's you can make a living.
Just, well, yeah,
you can't do teach.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a horrible thing to say because it's sort of true and not true. Because if you could, teaching wouldn't be your first option other than the career.
Yeah, but some people who are really good at things cannot teach it.
Yeah,
I have found some of the best teachers are not people who were great at the thing, but they understood how to deliver the beginnings of it.
Yeah,
there's a thing, big thing in boxing where some of the like the best ever boxing coaches were not good boxers.
Right.
They just, you know, some people just don't have the physicality to do that thing, but they have the mentally, so they just got somebody else's body. Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of works. I know there's a general rule people tend to teach if they're not doing it.
Well,
but it's still, you can be a very, very good teacher.
Well, I do. So I'm an artist as well. So I paint and I draw. And sometimes I do art events and I'll go along and I'll do a step by step for someone. But it's so difficult because they're like, well, so where do I start? And I'm like, well, I start here, but I don't know how to actually sometimes teach it because I'm like, sometimes it just comes to me, like, and I'll just be there and, you know, I don't really have like
a
step by step. I just literally just do it. And then I'm like, oh, it's a drawing.
Do you remember that film of the mathematician, the Indian guy that went to Oxford in the 60s? Oh, God, his name, it's got V and an S in it. It's on my LinkedIn profile.
Don't all Indian names have a...
Yeah. It's got like... It's the word dyslexic. It's got the worst... It's all the worst letters all bunged together in two different words. But yeah, he came to... it was about racism coming to England. But he had like this genius mind, even amongst geniuses.
Right.
But because he come from a poor background, he didn't grow up in an education system. But he intuitively could figure things out mathematically... But he didn't know how he was doing it.
Mm.
So they would say, but when he came to England, they were saying to him, basically, you can't just, even though you're getting things right, this Western culture, you have to prove your work along the way.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get, because he would say, it's because of his nature, he would say, you know, it's from God. You know, I just from God.
Yeah.
But they said, that's no good here. You need to have them. So he had
you need to
train.
Show your work.
Yeah.
He spent years training himself to figure it out.
I went for an interview for a top art college, I'm not going to say it, but I went in, I just do completed pieces. Like I'll go to a canvas and I'll paint and I'll finish it.
Yeah.
And that's my artwork. I don't do little drawings to go up to that point.
Right.
I literally just do it. So I remember having a portfolio and I was like, these are my drawings. And they're like, so where's your sketchbooks with all the ideas before this?
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, how did you get to this? And I was like, well, we're you can see I just got to it. You know, that's my painting. And then they just, they said to me that my art was naive, you know.
Oh, that's literally ridiculous.
They said
that
to me and it put me off going to college after because I was 18 and it really stung me. And I just didn't go, I went straight into working. I didn't really, and then I went back to college a year after because I was like,
I don't like that word naive. It's a great insult. Like, I'm going to use that for an insult.
Yeah.
Because it's such a great insult. I mean, you're just naive and you're thinking it's so great.
Yeah.
But isn't that the point of college?
Yeah, exactly.
Is to take somebody who might be naive but has a talent and then teach them.
Why can't you teach me to do this? Exactly.
Right.
Like, why can't
Naive is like, that's so strange. What if I went at math? That guy, I'm like, I'm really good at math. They're like, yeah, but you don't know the fundamentals. I'm like, well, that's why I'm applying.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
If I already knew it, I would just start doing math or whatever.
Because I'm going from A-level. Like, it's not a specialized like a sixth form that I went to. You
right,
know?
None of that means anything to me.
Oh, probably, so a college. So from like 16 to 18.
Is A level.
Is A level, yeah. So it's like
high school.
High school. Right. We call it sixth form.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. Okay. But yeah.
Isn't it funny you just get a bad teacher? Like life's that fragile that you can just get somebody.
But I had a really lovely teacher when I was in A-level. One of my pieces went into the Royal Academy in Art, like the online exhibition when I was 17, someone came around the school and was like, oh, I like that. We'll put it on online. So I had all this stuff to take to this art college, be like, I can produce these things. Why aren't you not?
Where can I see your work? Can you put it on on the YouTube? Can you put it as a comment?
I'm just plugging my art.
Put it on the comment so I can. And then I'm going to write on each piece whatever the opposite word of naive is.
Yeah.
What is the opposite word? What is something after done being naive? Educated.
But even that's quite a loaded word.
What's opposite of naive? Experienced.
Experienced.
This is a very experienced piece.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like
unique.
Yeah.
No, I've looked at. I mean, some of the things. But I always think what pops out your mouth first is the thing that you should go back to. Like, and when I saw yours, one of the things I first thought was, did you paint that? Like, do you know what I mean? And you go,
well, that's actually what the art people said, by the way. They're like, prove your work. He's like saying the same thing to you.
No, I thought, that's really good.
Did you paint
show
that?
Your work.
Show me how you got to that.
You know what? I would love, after all this, she never did. These are all somebody else.
Yeah. But it's very popular now to go on Instagram and have someone, people love it of how they've done it and the sped up version.
Yeah.
That's quite a ballsy thing to put your own artwork up online if you haven't made it. It's just people commenting on
it. But it's like stand up, it's like, okay, so where's your notes?
Yeah.
You need to do a video of you working away, doing your notes, and then practicing in the mirror, and then going up on stage. No one's asking you to do that.
Yeah.
Well, the whole idea of art college is a funny thing anyway, right? The same reason why we don't have stand-up comedy college. Like, do you really need it? And maybe you can because you can learn some technique, but you can also get that from a mentor.
You get it from YouTube.
And now you get it from YouTube. Do you need that? Unless you're going to teach art.
Yeah.
Because any sort of critique of art, that is so individual.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have a painting that's what a block of black and a block of pink and sell that for 5 million because of who it is. It's so specific. But then that's just shit. That's nothing. Mm. So it's just for anybody to say that's not good because you go, to who? You. Mm. Who are you? Why the bastion of knowledge?
I don't know. I also think maybe university and stuff is very much for networking as well. Knowing who to speak to. I think that's probably it. It's just like, okay, well, you're in this prestigious college. I'm going to hook you up with the best people, the best
galleries. So do you have regret? Do you have a regret about this?
I don't know. I probably would have probably been, worked out a bit different if I didn't go.
And then what? I mean, what do you think? You would have been doing an illustrator for a company. What do you think you would be doing?
Yeah, maybe something more in art.
Might have ended up as a teacher.
I didn't really.
Other people, that's naive.
But, you can network yourself. You can do all these things.
Listen, you should create art. It's part of being human. Yeah. Yeah. Creating art, creating music, do it no matter what, regardless what anybody says. It's naive or not. Great. Maybe the work like you're talking about, maybe the art I like to look at is naive art.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something interesting.
A lot of people.
Maybe her thing was just a horse body and a mane.
You haven't seen my artwork.
And
yet.
They're being kind, but what is it?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Say naive.
It's just stick men.
Yeah. you're kind of naive.
But then
when you do the stick men?
Yeah.
And it's changing every time.
Yeah.
And you go like that. It's a flip.
They're like, where's your artwork?
There it is.
But then maybe that's so ludicrous, then it becomes a specific type of artwork. You go, oh my, she's really ironic.
Right. Actually, there is a famous artist called Stick, and he does stick men.
Yeah, see, so, anything. That honestly, art
is like, this is my family.
Yeah.
My mom's the one in the dress with the triangle.
As you can see, there's a tree.
No, that's
there's
my
a
auntie.
House.
Oh, God, there's a thing I was listening about, magicians, and they were talking about, how they do certain tricks to do with the mind where it's not actually a trick. They just know enough about human beings. And they'll say draw a picture on a piece of paper. And they know, and it's sometimes wrong, but as a general rule, they know people can't draw. So they go for safety, which is a house.
Yeah.
And so they know roughly most people are going to because when I say to you, right, so draw me a picture. I'm not saying draw me a picture and show me it next week.
Right.
You assume there's a time limit. Because I'm just going to turn my back and you're under pressure.
Right.
So you will automatically go back to the easiest thing to draw,
like,
which is a house.
Right.
And then they'll say, right, okay, if you got it, and they'll go, yeah. And they'll say, right, so add something else onto it. And they sort of know, again, because you're under pressure, social pressure, because there's a time limit here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're probably going to do smoke
and
a gate or a dog.
A tree.
Right. And then they'll turn around and they'll say, right, I'm seeing smoke and I'm seeing like is there some border? Is there a fence? Right. I'm seeing animals.
Mm.
And then you go, but they know it's the psychology.
Oh, yeah, that's
got,
so good.
Bastards.
That can't work every time, but
yeah, okay. Yeah,
it works enough.
Well, a lot of the magic tricks, the TV show ones, it's partially fake because they'll speak to a lot of people and most of the times it fails.
Mm.
But they just show the ones that work, which is awful.
What about that one? What was it? Darren Brown? Or was it
He does the mental stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he wanted to predict the lottery, and that didn't happen.
Oh.
And I think he got a couple of numbers. I can't remember if I've gotten I've got the magician right.
Yeah, Darren Brown. Yeah,
he was trying to literally pick the lottery and like find out but by going through all of the other lottery numbers to find out the probability of the next one.
But it can't be, it's just like, completely random.
It's completely random.
Okay, I have a story.
Go on.
It's the best, it's the funniest stand-up that I've seen in London. It was during one of the open mic nights. If there's any comedian listening to this that does the circuit, they'll know exactly who I'm talking about. It's a guy and he does magic.
Okay.
And he runs his own comedy night, but it all went wrong. But he's not funny enough or clever enough to make into a bit. So he was like, it was a full house. It was New Year's Eve. So it's like all these people and they're all crazy. And he's doing these magic tricks where he ends up choking on like the thing that's supposed to come out of his mouth.
Did he do it ironically?
No.
He's just bad at it.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And it went so bad. He was like choking and trying to pull the thing out. And then he had all these things that were falling out of his pants.
Yeah.
Like it was the most bizarre thing. And I thought it was the fun. I'm like, that is your bit.
You'd have to assume.
And I tried to explain it to him afterwards. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Just do
like
what you're doing.
It's like bringing slapstick back, isn't it?
Oh,
it's just
God.
Like, you know, sometimes we do like that. We do like some. And someone to laugh at like failure sometimes.
But
it's
he couldn't.
Like
it's
yourself.
Like the show that goes wrong in the West End.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He was just really living it.
It was, yeah.
It was like when you were saying when you went to the circus and that guy, the old guy, was doing
kept dropping things.
Juggling and he kept dropping it. If you have some sense of humour with it, if you laugh at yourself or go, woo, you know.
Yeah, there was two. There was a younger guy.
Do something.
And he was getting it wrong. It was a really small. It was like they weren't really qualified to do what they were doing. But one of them was getting away with throwing stuff.
Right.
But there was like 10 people, but they built the whole. They were working, selling the candy floss as well. Like it was like travelling.
Right, right.
So they weren't that great. And it was done on the cheap. Like there was chairs where it was on the cheap. But one was young and he was laughing. He was selling the things as you came in the door. And then when he's now doing the tricks, I think, okay.
You know what? I
and
prefer
it's in a muddy
this.
Field.
This
it's
is, awful. Yes.
The car's got stuck. Like, this is part of the joke. But anyway,
all of that
but they had another guy who clearly must have been doing this like 40 years ago and just was not enjoying it. And he was terrible. And I was dying inside for it to be over. Take my money back. Because he just, he looked like he didn't want to be there, and he kept dropping stuff. And the other guy was laughing, and everyone's there, but he was just silence. And I was thinking,
no,
this sounds
But that could almost be afterwards that he comes out with a big smile on his face, and it could have been holding a big gimmick.
But it's actually an interesting, like, short story of like a short film of like
a little traveling.
And if you could see his life, like
well, somebody I was with saw them in Tesco's later on.
Right, his whole life, like
flashing,
dropping
passes
it, and like one hits him on the head.
But it was at a point where I thought, well, I could sort of 50-50 do what you're doing. I'll drop a few.
Right.
But
right.
This is your thing.
Right.
I was thinking maybe somebody fell out and got sick and there was only a few of them.
But you know, I can do it.
Yeah, your brain sort of
I can do it.
You must have had to be just stand in at the I remember
like,
when
come on Bernard, can you do it? Yeah, okay, I'll try.
When I was living a sort of life of a vagrant, where the travelling circuses would come around every summer and you'd know where they were and they'd hire just local people to help build the whole thing.
Oh,
like
right.
The bigger ones.
Yeah.
And I remember building these things and just thinking, oh, I can't be bothered. I'm just going to miss that one out. Oh, that's broken. I'm not going to tell them. And it's only years later I thought, Jesus Christ.
That's why you were homeless. That was your work ethic.
That's my work ethic.
But did you, so with your stand-up, have you ever forgotten your lines? What's your go-to?
Yeah, you must be sort of, improv.
Yeah. So if you forget what your next joke is, I mean, you're stuck. The idea is that you have enough material, you have something you can go to.
Come back to it.
Right.
But that's quite a nice way, because then you...
I started playing the guitar. I started playing the guitar. So I was writing like country songs, like funny little country songs.
Yeah.
And I'm not a great singer, but I can sell a song. And I got on the wrong note. Like I was in the wrong key.
Yeah.
And I finished the song singing totally in the wrong key. Where the audience was like this.
Yeah.
And this was like a good night. Like people paid good money and I'm getting paid good money. And they're like... Like, if they could boo, they would have booed.
Do you know a comedian?
Just clap
I'm like, see, you know, when somebody's singing in the wrong note?
Yeah. What did you do after that?
Good night. Thank you very much.
Couldn't you just change the key? I mean, I don't know.
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't get I was singing on the wrong note.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Couldn't figure it out. And the joke's already funny, so now you're not following along with the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's a solid bit.
Yeah.
Oh, so you play the guitar as well, then?
I play at the guitar.
Oh. There's a comedian called Les Dennis in the 70s, and he would always he's this guy that you didn't expect to be able to play the piano very well.
Oh, that's
big gruff
so great.
Guy.
Yeah.
So he'd play the piano, and he'd specifically choose very soft pieces, and he'd play it. And it was in the times when you had the 70s and 80s show where they'd end on a musical thing. You know, from musical theatre, it was more of a show than a stand-up thing. And at the end, they'd play a song, and he'd do the song, and it's very soft, and he'd sing the words, and go, oh, we can sing like he's a big gruff guy. And then he'd go for the high notes and specifically sing them horrendously bad, like scream, I love you! What? And then he'd drop back down to the
right.
And it was like, it's so funny because it's
so
unexpected.
Yeah.
Right. And then once you've set that little thing
but then
up,
you expect it to come again.
Yeah.
When he's doing the lower bit.
Because you can hear a chord progression. You're like,
yeah, you're like, oh,
yeah. Oh, that's a great bit.
He's gone out of fashion now because of all these mother-in-law jokes.
Oh, dear. Lee Evans does that as well. At the end of his set, he plays the piano and
is
he does
still about Lee Evans?
Yeah, I think I went to go see him like years and years ago. I think it was like 2010. Yeah. But he was brilliant. But there's another one where he uses swearing. He does swear quite a lot, but he uses it as like the punchline. He's like, he does that sort of like you know really high pitched swearing, and it's funny because it goes with the joke that he's
I'm not
doing.
Against swearing. Yeah.
But that's just one example of where it does actually work, because I feel like that the swearing kind of heightens the joke a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm from Essex. I love a good swear word sometimes.
Good F word.
Yeah, I love
arbitrary C words just thrown in.
But when I started writing, I was like, can I do this?
Right, yeah.
And there's so many more words that are it's so much... It's funnier than fucking...
In the comedy stores, do they say you can't say certain things?
No.
Nothing?
You could
talk about race and if it's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing. You just walk in.
Yeah. I mean, there are some like smaller nights that are like safe nights.
Yeah. Mm.
But you're not getting cancelled from like at the comedy store.
So there's no... They just... If you're funny, you're funny.
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Do you do a lot of private stuff? Because isn't that where the problems start? We have to do corporate things.
Yeah, the corporate. I mean, there's so much money in corporate. So I've done some corporate work, and those are great.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Especially what I do. So I have a bit where I get people line dancing by accident. They think they're giving me directions on how to get to the next tube station.
Yeah.
And with the walking, like walk to the right, turn around, do this, like mind the gap. After I have them do it 3 or 4 times, I just play the music.
Mm.
And then we go over, and now they're line dancing. So all that sort of stuff plays so well for a corporate gig.
Yeah.
Do you reference America a lot?
Yeah, because I talk about the Ozarks, I talk about white trash, trash.
What about Trump? Does he pop up or is that a bit overdone?
I don't, because I didn't like, you move here and you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad to be in England where they're not going to talk about politics in America. That's all they talk about.
Yeah.
Like every British comedian had a comment about Trump. I was like...
Yeah. Well, it's the nearest thing to celebrity outside of celebrity, isn't it? It's still, it's that level. It wouldn't, like it's not the Nixon era. It's celebrity.
The idea that British people are so obsessed with American politics.
Yeah, because it's Hollywood. Wouldn't they say...
Right, it is.
It's Hollywood for ugly people, politics.
Oh, I guess, because it's more interesting than our politics. Our politics is...
Grey suits. Boring.
You know what? I can't even see him in, you know, the parliaments all standing up, you know, doing all that. But like in America, it's just like... It's sort of like watching a a TV show, you know? It's just so captivating.
Yes.
It's a reality show.
But politics, so all politics, anything, I knew nothing about England when I moved here. I thought it was just going to be like old women drinking tea. I like was not interested in London. I said, I'm going to put in my 3 years, we're going back home.
Yeah.
That was the deal here. But doing stand-up, everything I learned about British culture, first I learned through stand-up. Like, I came here right when Theresa May was, like, dancing.
Yeah.
Like there's a clip of her dance. Do you remember this? Yeah. So, like, all the comedians, I'm like, who's Theresa May? Why is she dancing? Like, all of this. Like, Boris Johnson, never heard of him until comedy stuff. Like, everything I knew.
Oh, to be fair, Boris Johnson, I was more interested in politics when Boris Johnson came in for some reason. I think it was the hair.
Because he is entertainment.
Yeah, I think he's just like,
But they turned themselves into cartoon characters.
And also it was during COVID, so we're all at home. All we were doing is watching the news, and it was just being... Yeah.
Right, like Brexit. I never heard of Brexit.
Yeah.
I had never heard about the Irish Troubles. Like, I didn't know anything about them until I stand up. Like, an Irish comedian would get up, and I'm like, what are they talking about? The Troubles. Like, that's like America. You did a thing. There was a question thing that you did on a podcast, like, back, and you, like, asked these questions, like, where is Egypt? What continent? Do you remember this?
Oh, yes, I did.
I'm like, so I watched that this morning. I was like, oh, ask an American, like, all those. Yeah. Like, I would have no idea where Egypt...
You know, on the train, and, like, even now, I can't even listen to that one. I listened to it, and I was like, oh, my God, you idiot. Because I actually did that quiz with my sister. She's 38, and she got all of them right.
Oh.
And I was just like, but she was the academic one.
Yeah, but your people that you're asking to here, they were getting them all right. They were getting most of them right. I was like, not an American. When I first moved here, I called my travel agent. I said, hey, I'm going to do Edinburgh, so I need to get to Scotland. And my travel agent says, okay, Brandon, what do you want to do? Do you want to take a train or do you want to fly there? I'm like, I can't take a train. It's an island. And they're like, Brandon, you need to get a map. Because I had this idea of like England and then like Ireland, this little, and then Scotland is a little island. And like, I had no idea.
Because Trump you sort of understand, because he didn't understand like Ireland and Northern Ireland, and Ireland isn't part of England or UK. Yeah. So we go, so what do you sort of understand? And they say that most Americans don't have a passport because the country's so big.
And like my family, what do we do every year for holiday? We went camping.
Yeah.
You don't go.
You can cross state and feel like you're in a different country.
California is... In California, you can go skiing in the morning and go surfing in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, you have it all right there within California.
Yeah, so why do you need to? Why do you have the desert,
which you don't even have.
I would assume if you got like a stand-up thing, it would be better to go to another country with your culture, and because you'd stand out more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like being in America, coming to England.
It's interesting. I saw so much of England just doing the circuit here. It was great.
What's your favorite place in England?
Oh, I like the Peak District, like in all that area, all those little tiny villages all the way around there. Yeah. I think that's a great area.
It's like Lord of the Rings. Yeah. When you go
Hobbit. So interesting.
Do you love it? Like, because obviously we've got so many different accents in
the UK. Oh, no. So you don't even, Americans don't even get this. I mean, even in London, like, I think I lived in London for 2 weeks. I didn't meet a British person.
Yeah.
Like, you just, like, Central every London, accent, you have no idea what accent is going to come out of somebody's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It is bizarre and it's crazy.
Yeah.
There was a comedian, I can't remember his name. He got caught out about 20 years ago. What he did is he learnt all the, like, the biggest stand-up routines ever. Richard Pryor, all of them, right?
Okay.
Learnt them in Chinese.
Oh.
Then went around China and was doing them as his.
My God.
And then he got caught out. Oh,
it'd be great if he just, evil that was genius, his thing. He was like, no, I'm going to do American stand-up.
Yeah, but no one else would have done that. Yeah. Like, who's going to learn a Chinese?
It's if so it's before YouTube, you can get away with that.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it was, the internet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I thought.
So many things you got away with before the internet.
You could get away with it if you were doing it ironically. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Can you get in trouble? Is it copyright?
But it's like going around
completely steal family. No, you can't.
No, but it's going around like pretending to be Britney Spears and going
and impersonator, really.
Yeah, an impersonator. Right. Isn't there
And you're not going to have much competition. I'm not learning Chinese.
I know, exactly. Even the comedian's not going to be
That's a big market.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like what jokes, like, how weird. Like,
no, but
it's going to be very
the routines.
Like,
he was copying the entire
I know,
routine.
But if in the routine it's like, you know, I'm from Compton. Yeah. This is what happens in like black
related.
Culture.
Yeah,
Richard, but he's not even like addressing it.
Yeah, yeah.
He just
maybe he just changed the cultural.
Yeah.
He just less N word. Or maybe they like that sort of
very straight.
Yeah, because even if you just learn the language, you don't know about the culture. Yeah. You don't know even if that joke is going to hit.
Or maybe the comedy was like avant-garde, like because he's like doing this weird. You're like, what does this mean? And he's talking about like braids in your hair. And,
Cornrows. Talking of accents, I mean, I wonder if we'll all eventually just be speaking a type of American.
I always thought that, but it's so deep.
Things.
Little kids still have those accents. Still have.
That's why I was saying, like, me and my sister actually talking the other day. We got an estuary accent. That's what it's called because we're not. We've got an accent where you don't actually know where we come from. Some people think I'm from Australia, from America, like, or from S. Sometimes when I'm like really drunk, I'll be more Essex, like, Olaf. But like, you know, like I'm saying, like, it's.
Yes, but that's what I mean. It's a slow move to just one language.
As well. There's not a lot of Cockneys anymore. Because
no, but that's what
all,
I mean. It's all becoming one thing.
Yeah.
And the biggest, from a child, I mean, you've still grown up in a different culture, community. Whereas if you're a kid, you're basically brought up in front of the TV, which is entertainment, which is mostly American.
That's true.
I mean, I hear a lot of people saying cops instead of police. And I thought, I used to ring
But that's a word that's different than like.
No, but it's just a slow, like,
right.
Totally, yeah. Cop. It's slowly getting in 100 years. If you just went there, I wonder if you'd even be able to understand these
probably
things. Just like if we went back to the Victorian era, we wouldn't understand what they were saying because the sentences would be so off. But I wonder.
I always think this about whenever you watch a movie that takes place in the future, like in the way, like all the Star Trek way, and they have like multicultural cast.
Yeah,
I'm like, I wonder if we're all just going to be the same color.
Yeah,
you know they always want we're gonna have this white person, we're gonna have a black person, we're gonna have a Chinese. But I wonder in the future if we just all be like you just be like the human race is all one color, and then you have the alien races.
No,
like, everybody's kind of tan.
I said racism.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? Though
everybody
was
kind of tan.
That would be so great.
Then Essex wouldn't have to do the
spray. The fake tan. Yeah. I mean, I think I was mainly fake tan when
my
I was
my favorite
younger.
Thing is to walk around like in Soho on a Friday and Saturday night, and you can hear the Essex girls coming.
Right,
like you can hear them coming. Then you hear like the mating call of the men, like behind them. Hey, love.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here they come. They all come.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's like the chubby. Ones, you know, the chubby girls from Essex, and they have their high heels, and they on the Soho streets. They're the best. They're nice and loud and pink.
They're the best though, because they're the ones you want to talk to on a night out, because they're just like they're up for a good time. They're fun. They'll talk to you.
If I ever get a red carpet interview in the States, like I'm inviting like 3 Essex girls to like be my date and on my arm, like that is going to be my entourage. Essex girls,
time of their lives.
Yeah.
They're going to have, and people are going to have the time of their lives around them because that's what it is.
They'll assume they're characters, though.
Oh man,
they'll just say they'll be saying, "What do you do?" Say, "Just be you."
Yeah, just be you.
The world will see.
Here's $300. Go buy all the makeup you want. Yeah,
like back in America, do they think that people from London all have that sort of? Oh, like very posh.
Okay, so we have two things. We have Queen's English, and then we have Guy Ritchie movies.
Okay. Oh, right.
So those are just the only two versions that we really have of the British people.
I noticed when I was I date somebody who lived in the States, and when you'd go into, like, you'd phone places up, like fashion places, they'd always have a British person answering the phone. I thought it obviously gives them a bit of class.
Right, like all of our villains, all of our like hoity-toity, it's going to be British.
Yeah.
I listened to, there's a book, I listened to an autobiography on Jim Henson about his thing. I like those sort of people that were from an era. And he was one of the best autobiographers I've ever listened to because he was the real deal hippie. He's the nearest version of a hippie in multi-million pound deals, but stayed a hippie. It was sort of Steve Jobs wanted to be like him. All the bullshit Steve Jobs was to be Jim Henson. Jim Henson with $100 million deals turned things down with people pissed off at him because it wasn't what the Muppets was about. It's about kids. He wouldn't bend.
Right.
Anyway, so I liked that whole thing. I liked him. But a book came out, and it's recently, Muppets in Moscow.
Mm.
It was in the 90s when they Russia was trying to be a bit more, let's give Western culture a go sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was all bullshit. But they put the Muppets into America, into Russia, thinking we sort of get the idea of the different cultural things. You haven't got a fucking clue, because I mean, the woman says, I can't remember her name, but it's Muppets in Moscow, and it's about translating Muppets in Moscow. they didn't want it because even in, during the change, there was a lot of pushback about what America stood for and things like that.
Right.
One of the sponsors got blown up. Two of the people in the TV production company were assassinated. The Muppets,
oh,
this is.
Really?
Yeah.
So they had to, at all points, make decisions about, are we going to carry on doing this?
Right, because this represents American culture.
Yeah, but they
something
felt...
Something as harmless as, like,
but
Kermit
half
the Frog.
The people wanted it, and the old people didn't want it, but it was making money, and there was this constant push. She said, we thought we knew about cultural things, but we thought certain things were universal with the Muppets. You know, it works with everyone. No. She said, one of the things, she said, like, well, what we're going to do is we'll have, like, the Muppets with the... Firstly, Russia's got quite a long history with its own Muppet things. So it's different styles of Muppets. It's a bit more...
You mean with puppets?
Puppets, yeah, sort of thing. Where the Muppets, if you listen to the Jim Henson thing, it's a very, very specific type of Muppetry. It's more designed... They're more animated. So it's not like a thing you're looking back at, like a Punch and Judy show.
Right.
And the you have to be trained for months to be able to operate one of those puppets, very specifically. Anyway, and she said, we went over and said, one of the things we were going to do was like an American thing of have, we'll have the kids with the Muppets on like a lemonade stall. You know, teach about selling, which starts to get a bit sort of... you know, it's not
capitalist.
And they were like,
for everybody.
She said they were
get in line.
Without irony,
you get a lemonade.
The idea. She said they were horrified at the idea. She said, "No, you don't understand." She said, "In Russia, all markets are owned by the mafia. We don't have that sort of
it's not even
entrepreneurial. Everything's owned by somebody.
So you can have a mafia Muppet.
A mafia Muppet.
They didn't go for that idea. She said when they were she said they were auditioning kids for the show.
Mm.
I said the kids would come on and they would like they'd get them to sing a song. I said the first kid come on. And he was singing a song about World War II and like the end, like the world is under destruction. And it finished. And she said, we didn't have a lot of time to talk because she said, but I did say to them, I said, that was quite weird. Like, kid was singing this World War II song. Next person, girl, come on. 8 years old. She's singing a song and it's something like Khrushchev or something like that.
Mm.
I think it's in the name of and it's the lover going off to die in the trenches of World War II.
Oh, no.
And she had to say to the guy, like, what the fuck's going
on? What's going on?
Like, there's these kids. And she said, the kids, it's a different, they've come from a different culture.
Mm.
Is that any different than a British kid singing Ring Around the Rosie?
Yeah, in a sort of way. She said, the kids don't understand the words of what they're saying. But those songs would have been sung to them by their grandmothers.
Yeah.
So it's more the tone. It's a lullaby to them. Yeah. They don't understand the gravity of the words. But Jesus, one talking about the end of the
you know what?
The lover's going off
all
to die.
Of those songs are better than that song from Wicked. I mean, that song from... what's that? Frozen.
Frozen, okay. Yeah.
I would prefer a Russian song about people dying than that song that a little American kid will sing from Frozen.
What is it called?
That's the worst song in the world.
What is it?
I think I even know it, but without knowing the word.
Idina Menzel singing that horrible...
It's that main one you've heard.
Horrible song. Where I think she actually goes sharp in the song that you hear.
Let It Go.
Let it go, that's it. Let it go, let it go.
It was all right until the thousandth time.
I went to go see Frozen and I hated it. I literally hated it. I came out of it and I was just like, oh God, the... younger sister was so fickle, like, and then it was just she just fell in love with everyone, and then you know.
But was it designed? Were you the only one over 5 foot?
Oh yeah, that's true. That is
like,
true.
This show is naive. Everyone's going. This show is so naive.
Sit down. We can't see.
I'm walking.
I am sat down.
I got a story to tell you real fast. I went to go see Wizard of Oz. There was a Wizard of Oz show playing here.
Oh, yeah.
A great like rendition of it.
Yeah.
I went with a buddy of mine. I'm sitting there. An American couple came and sat behind us.
Right.
We're in Soho watching this. Yeah. And she's like, we had to sit behind the tallest people in all of England. And then we're just sitting there. I'm so embarrassed. She's there with all of her little bratty American kids.
Yeah.
And then she goes, and I thought this show was for children.
Oh, God. Oh, piss off.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And it is. And I'm here for it.
Oh,
and
God.
And the gays.
And the gays.
Yeah. Wizard of Oz for the children and the gays.
Because I have seen on your Instagram, do you see a lot of musicals?
I see a lot of musicals. Yeah. I see every musical.
And I saw that you hated Wicked. And I was just like... Did you hate it?
I loved Wicked. Like, I know the soundtrack. I've seen it before. I didn't like this Wicked.
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
The Glinda's not good. I know everybody thinks she's so great.
Yeah, I've seen it twice. I saw it with my best friend. And then I was just like, she enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, this was terrible. And then I went to go see it again because I was just like, I'll give it another chance. But my sister got a free ticket. So I was like, oh, I'm not going to pay for it again. And I went along and I was like, yep, exactly the same.
So did you know the music beforehand?
I did, yeah, because I was in a choir when I was younger.
See, so I love the music and I like Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
The girl that's playing, was it the same Glinda both times you saw it?
There was something, it wasn't like Lion King, it wasn't like Aladdin, it was just not captivating.
The girl that's in it right now does have no comedy chops.
Okay, yeah.
And so she blows all the funny stuff that Glinda is.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Like, I got opinions on musical theater.
Yeah. What's your favorite music?
You make a point of going to see them all.
Les Mis. Yeah, I see everything.
Les Mis.
What's your favorite one off the top of your head?
Les Mis, that show in general, I don't like the version they're doing right now in Soho, this reimagining of it, but I like that show the best. I like the melody lines. I like the idea of grace and redemption.
Yeah.
All of that is so great.
I cried the whole way through it. I thought it was beautiful.
Do you come out, I haven't seen it, do you come out feeling uplifted? Or like, oh, for God's
sake. I mean, it's all, they all, spoilers. I mean, should I say it? I mean, they all die.
No, it's Les Mis. It's been going on for like 60
years. Yeah, they all die. I mean, they're all dead. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, you're not going to come out all singing around your chairs.
Because
like,
I watched the film The Road again the other day. I remember seeing it thinking, oh, God, that was, I felt bad after watching that. And I watched it again. And I turned off, I thought, well
when you watched it again.
But you know
I
what?
I remember it being filmed well.
Oh.
It felt like a good film.
Yeah.
And I watched it again and I thought, oh, I forgot.
There are some shows that I won't, like, I won't watch, it sounds cliche, but I won't watch Brokeback Mountain again.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but
it destroys me. That movie destroys me.
Once you've seen it, you've just like, okay, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I know what it's about.
And there's different things. You watch things for different, things you watch it for entertainment value, some things to feel good. There's Sunset Boulevard that's going on right now is the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. With the girl from Kit Kat, Nicole Scherzinger.
Okay, yeah.
Scherzinger,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
from, it's the best performance that I've ever seen.
Have you ever?
Great.
Pussycat Dolls.
Pussycat Dolls.
Kitty Cat
that's
Dolls.
That's Guys and Dolls.
You know Stephen Fry?
I know who he is. Yeah.
So he, in his autobiography, he talks about going to America when he wrote, do you remember the name of the thing he did? Oh, it's a well-known theatre player anyway. So he wrote and went everywhere with all the top people.
Come to America, what?
No, it's more even well-known. It's Me and My Girl. Me and My Girl. I think that's it.
Nope.
Me and My Girl. Anyway.
That is a musical.
Yeah.
But,
it's anyway. Yeah. So he wrote the whatever for it.
Okay.
But anyway, he goes around, he talks about the single worst social incident he ever saw. He was introduced to this woman who was like the biggest, like in a theatre director. She, whatever she said went,
right.
And everyone around her in the theatre was like, she would have like, there's a squeaking door. And he said, somebody said to him like, tomorrow that door will be off the hinges and chains. Like that's all she has to say.
Right.
And everyone panics.
Mm.
Anyway, so it's about this woman that everyone's like petrified of her. And he said, I went to the restaurant, this restaurant to meet her. And they were going to put, she was going to do the play. And he went up to the thing and he said, what? And he was talking about how rude they are. Like here, the waiters are quite sort of complimentary to you. Over there, it's as if you're getting in the way, like these posh reds. And your name. And he said, Stephen Rowe. I don't have it. Any other name? And he said, she wasn't looking at me in the eye. Well, I'm like, and like in England, you go, I'm sorry. Like he said, I'm apologizing for my name not being
right.
Anyway, so he sits down. It's a very posh restaurant. And she comes in, this woman. And he said, someone said, oh, it might be under the name so-and-so. And he said, the person's face went, oh, of course. And he said, like a, no irony, no shame. Oh, of course. And yeah, we'll get you the thing. And he said, anyway, so they sat her down, and then she turned up and she sat down, and they wheeled in like a telephone right next to her, and like that sort of woman.
Right.
They had the meal, whatever, and she said, everyone was on edge around her, and they said, oh, can we have the dessert? Yeah, bring it over. He said, think I'm over. He said, she put her hand in the fucking cake, tasted it, and said, it's shit, take it back, and threw
it. Oh, my God.
And he said it was the most horrific thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
She put her hand in the cake, and said, it's shit, put it back.
No one should ever be that kind of person.
Yeah,
no
New York, 80s, theatre, top of the... You know,
I don't even understand the story.
He said, well, he was just saying it was a horrific thing he's ever seen as a British human.
Yeah, it doesn't even sound
He said, I'm sure
real.
She was... Yeah. She was. She likes that people are scared of her.
And it's like a power.
He said, take it away, it's shit.
And why are they having cake?
He said,
I don't understand
this
story
is a five
at all.
Star restaurant. Yeah. He said, I felt, don't know if she.
And they bring cake out?
Yeah, well, at the end, like the tray, he said it was a trolley. And she, right. And but he said, I felt like it was a bit like she was showing me, she, like, I can say fuck you to anyone. So it felt like that.
You know what? Some people can. That doesn't mean you should.
Cake, like,
yeah,
that.
Exactly. It's a power hungry thing.
But he said it's the worst it's thing disgusting. To ever seen, like, ever seen.
I feel like you should always be kind because you never know who you're going to come across. Like, you should never burn any bridge. Because maybe someday in the future, that person might be...
Or just always be kind.
Just always be... Yeah, yeah, always be kind.
Period.
Like, exactly.
Full stop.
I like period. I like one of your hashtags. It was... I wrote it down. Identify as kind first.
Right.
I liked that.
Right.
It pops up a lot. I interviewed some people and I'd say to them at the end, like, major companies and say... what's the best bit of advice? That's no bullshit, like not nicey-nicey. Well, what's the best thing you could say to somebody? And I remember one bit, he said, the guy that owns Time Out, all the international, the whole lot, and he said, it's harder to say no to people you like. He said, you know, it just can tip you over from...
Right.
It's a little bit harder to say no to somebody if you like them.
Right.
And he said, I thought, yeah, that works. It's just, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's a little thing, but you go, when you stand back, it's... Why make life hard for yourself? If just be likable to people.
Yeah.
In certain instances, sometimes you've got to be a piece of shit. But as it, no, it worked. It does work. When I was putting everything together, the whole thing was because I would just beg people, say, look, I've got nothing and I don't know where to turn. Can you help me in any way? And if they don't know, can't do it, they'll know somebody that can because they like you and you're being honest. It's a little thing, but it is. It's one of those, like anything, the little things are the things that direct life. Like Oscar Wilde, when he said the little things are actually the things that direct you in life. You can fake the big stuff. The little stuff is where you will end up, how you acted every day to get to that end. We're going to end on something. So, go on, what was you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, is your partner with you?
That's why I'm here.
Oh, amazing.
My partner thinks he's Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
That's why we're here. He's getting a PhD at UCL in archaeology.
Oh, amazing.
Really? Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah,
that's why we committed to 3 years. Like, this is like that midlife crisis. He's like, this is what I want to do. And I said, we'll sell everything. We'll let you reach your dream.
Wow.
He's an academic.
The 3 years ends this year then, does it?
So no, it'll be 4 years in February and we're staying. That's
you are staying.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, we got an extension because of COVID and then we got another extension when I got sick.
Oh, right.
But now we're trying to make it just to stay. I love London. I'm going to tell you my favorite thing about London before we end.
Yeah.
It's the only place I've ever lived in the whole world where you can eat outside without bugs.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
It is. Yes. That's like mic drop for me, why I'll never leave.
Yeah.
California, there's always flies. Missouri, anywhere in the east, you got mosquitoes. Mosquitoes in Florida.
Yeah.
Here, London, outside eating.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
But that's...
Even in Berlin, I went to Berlin in August, and wasps everywhere. Everywhere.
Forget insects for you.
It's awful. Yeah, here is lovely. I mean,
no screens on the windows here. It's like heaven.
Yeah. I didn't even. This year, I wasn't even bitten by a mosquito. Normally, every single year, I'm bitten by a mosquito.
It's a little bit too cold for insects.
Yeah, it's that perfect, Goldilocks weather in London.
I mean, we were saying this morning, like, this is like the perfect weather. I mean, it's autumn, it's a crisp day, it's sunny.
Everybody in America thinks it rains all the time over here.
Yeah.
It's because the BBC, every TV show or movie starts with somebody running through the rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I live over in Bloomsbury, the BBC is always filming a little garden outside in front. Yeah. They bring in fake rain. No one's going to believe it's England unless you don't bring in the rain.
Give the people what they want. I mean,
it's like cliche. This big lie. Right.
It's so cliche, but they do use it in films that if there's a new beginning, the rain, they have to have the rain to wash away. Yeah. Like,
I went and saw Tina Turner, the musical, and in one scene she goes to London, and what do they do? Everybody in the cast has an umbrella. I'm like...
Because I guess you know where they are. So the director or the film, they don't have to go, London. You just know where they
are.
They
make it rain.
She was one of the last of that era to go, wasn't she, Tina? There's not many left.
Rod Stewart, I think there's a lot of them left.
I think the women had more glamour. Do you know?
Just the women.
Yeah, just that glamour. Because they would have had it harder as well. I think when she died, I thought, that's probably one of the last ones of that. Of that type of weight of coming from that era, Aretha Franklin, that sort of thing, where you go, now it's a different thing. But that to come, somebody that went through something.
I think there's a lot of them still alive.
Do you think? No.
I mean, Madonna's from that era.
Yeah.
I know.
Hopper's from that era.
But Madonna.
I know it's a different thing. But when you're talking about like age range of people,
No,
you're talking about that, like,
the glamour, the
glamour.
I think the struggle. Do you know that?
Right.
Because I listened to the autobiography of Madonna, and I just came away just thinking she's just hollow.
Like, it's but just, who are you thinking? Who would you relate her to?
No, but I don't know when you're going through the, you actually know that, oh, it's not a joke. She only cares about the next thing, and then there's nothing else.
No, I mean, when you talk about Tina Turner, who are these other people you're relating?
I think that the struggle.
Whitney?
She was the next generation. I think anybody that came through that racial, you know, when you had to deal with the racism, right. Like proper racism. When it's
so
like,
you're talking like black R&B artists who came through that.
Yeah. Okay. Whereas before it had lessened a bit and you didn't have that level of struggle.
Yeah. But,
I get it.
Because I knew a little bit about it and you know the struggle, you go, God, that type of maturity is gone. It gets a little bit less mature every generation, but to have that level of...
I would just love the glamour. Like, go on a night out and go to a bar and there'd just be this glamorous person getting up and singing and everyone's in suits and like...
Looks. I do like the idea of like hats and
hats,
suits.
Like going on a night out and putting your... you know, suspenders on and, you know, going out and girls getting dressed up in lovely clothes and, I really wish I was a part of that.
Like Sinead O'Connor only died and I followed her career through. She was really an individual person.
She's an interesting lady.
You don't realise until, like, you follow her story. Anybody in their mid-20s giving the finger to the Catholic Church about paedophilia with the manager saying to you, if you do that on that show, you will never work in America again. And you don't, because you're saying fuck you to the Catholic Church. 30 years ago, she did not give a shit. Even when other people would come out, give me some pop stars, like the typical pop star, young one.
Ariana Grande.
No, yeah, one of those, another one.
Oh, Beyonce. God.
No, the blonde hair. She was Taylor in the kids'
Swift.
Show. Yeah. Kid show?
Taylor Swift? That's Miley Cyrus? Grande.
That might be, and Miley Cyrus put something out.
Hannah Montana.
Are
you okay?
But Miley Cyrus, there was a thing, even with Miley Cyrus.
Did we trigger you with it?
Miley Cyrus was saying like, I admire because of this and that. And Sinead actually come out and said, listen, there's nothing like feminism about being in your underwear, swinging backwards and forwards on a ball. So don't try and like bring me onto your, I admire, because she did a video where she looked like her. Because it was just the hair in the eyes staring into a camera.
Right.
It's because of Sinead, feminism hashtag. And she said, I don't think what you're doing is feminism. Being in your underwear on a stage isn't what... Because she was the real deal. She was the real deal. Yeah. Like mental health. She did videos on mental health saying like she was getting mental health from like doctors in Dublin.
And she took the punches.
Yeah, but didn't her son,
Oh yeah, she lost her child. Yeah, but she was getting horrendous levels of the first generation of mental health drugs in Ireland when they didn't even want to believe it really was a thing, and they just bombarded her whole life was that. But to still like be a complete that is the definition of an individual that even people are trying to sort of jump on your bandwagon to show you off, and you're saying don't. I'm not you. Trust me, I'm not you. I'm the real deal.
Just someone standing by their morals.
The only other person I've heard do something like that was Muhammad Ali. Because it's when you're in your 20s and you've got the world ahead of you and somebody says, that will go if you do that. And they go, don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like she said, I think it was like one of the main chat shows to go bollocks to the Catholic Church.
It was Saturday Night Live. Yeah, she tore up a picture of the Pope.
Yeah, that was And the man was saying to her, if you do that, she never worked in America again. And that's fine when you're 50 and you're trying
that's right.
When you're 20.
I know.
And
I'm
going to close the door to my career on principle. Yeah. You'll never get them again.
Good for her.
Now everything's for sale.
I
love his Muhammad Ali, Sinead O'Connor.
I can't think of anybody.
But it does connect. There is a connection there.
Because of the age. Nobody had that level of stuff happening for them at that age. And when even in my 20s, I'm going to die on principle.
Yeah.
That don't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
Right, so anything... We didn't give you a lot of notes to go away with. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
You got the eargasm. You got that.
Did you draw the house?
I didn't draw the house.
You know that trick from now on.
Yeah,
next time they say, just draw a picture of a horse.
You go, right.
I can't wait for you to see my stick man.
I can't wait.
Oh boy,
that wasn't meant to come out like that.
Oh great. I mean, there's still a chance I might hate your art. There's still a chance I might be like, it is like, naive.
What is the art page? What is it? Your art?
Katie Grace artwork.
Where can everybody find you? I mean, Brandon Burke.
Yeah. So you can find me on my on my YouTube channel.
I laughed at the video when you were looking for your phone in the gym, and he said, "Go back and look where it was." The phone.
Oh, it's the AirPods. Yeah.
Expect the end. Oh my god!
And the British guy was just like, "Have you looked? Have you looked where you left them?" I was like,
"I was thinking, what a tosser."
Yeah. There he's like, "Of course I have." Yeah. Oh no, crap! I haven't.
Generation Explain. You can find me on Generation Explain or at Mr. Brandon Burke.
Okay. Well, I've just pulled my headphones out, so I can't hear myself, but I'm assuming everybody else can. So, Brandon, Sunday morning, thank you for coming up all this way.
Thank you so much. It's been very entertaining.
And we've given you something to go
around. And I'm going to take you out in Essex.
Yeah. Okay, great. I love it.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye. Here's your story. Let's begin. The world is fine. Come on, dive in. The future's here. It's right before your eyes. Step by step, you're on your way. Feels good to be alive. You could be larger than life, bigger than the world.